Good morning. This is Scott Wheeler of Derby, the host of the Vermont Voice, a program of 1490 AM WIK in Derby. Our guest this morning is Dan Taylor of St. Paul, Minnesota. The Barton native is with us to talk about the 250th anniversary of the raid of Rogers Rangers. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott. It's a pleasure to be back on your show.
And how is it over in St. Paul?
Well, it's actually a pretty typical fall day. It's overcast, going to rain, and quite cool.
Well, I guess maybe that's the weather it's heading our way, because right now it's balmy warm, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. It's a really beautiful day.
Excellent.
So, Rogers Rangers. Tell me a little bit about them.
Well, Rogers Rangers is really a fascinating story of the French and Indian War. The raid itself occurred on October 4th, 1759. So these are the weeks that we're in right now that would celebrate and commemorate the 250th anniversary of that raid. It's a fascinating story. It has all the elements of a great story. It's a covert operation. It has spies going into Canada. It has men that show extreme bravery. And really, Robert Rogers himself became such an inspirational leader to his men and to the British forces during that time that it's just been a great story to tell over and over again. I don't think there's anyone over the age of 40 that living in Vermont that hasn't seen the movie Northwest Passage with Spencer Tracy. So even Hollywood saw it as being a great story.
Hey, Dan.
Yes.
I'm over 40.
Have you seen the movie?
No.
Oh, my gosh. You got to get it.
Well, you know, I do lead kind of a sheltered life.
Well, I don't think it's out on DVD. It's on VHS.
All right. I'll have to dig it up, or if not, maybe you can find it for me over in the city.
I'll send it to you. But, you know, it's a great story, and it's significant for the Northeast Kingdom because it really is the first time that we have documentation of non-Native Americans being in our area.
How did you become interested in this topic?
Well, I've always been interested in history, and in particular, local history. And so growing up in Barton, I just knew that Rogers Rangers and some of his party came through the area. And actually, there was one section of his party that camped on Crystal Lake for one night, and his men were starving. We'll get into that a little bit later, perhaps. But I've always heard the story of Rogers Rangers coming through the Northeast Kingdom. And it's just an intriguing story.
Right. They actually came through in a number of different parties, didn't they?
Yeah, they actually, after the raid, they had to break up because they were just starving to death. They had to break up into 11 different groups. And those 11 groups came through the Northeast Kingdom and other parts of northern Vermont.
Hey, Dan, you know what we ought to do? We ought to actually back up a bit and talk a little bit about the raid and how the raid came about.
You bet. Well, Robert Rogers, he was actually born in Massachusetts, and at the time of the raid was 27 years old. At an early age, his family moved to New Hampshire, and as a young man, he enlisted in the New Hampshire militia, which would be the equivalent today of the National Guard. And so by the time the French and Indian War broke out in 1754, Robert Rogers was already a soldier. And so he offered his services to the British against the French up in Canada.
Right. And they actually raided, was it the Abenaki at St. Francis?
Yeah, the Abenaki Indians up in St. Francis, there's actually a number of communities of Native Americans up in Canada. All throughout the early 1700s, they staged raiding parties on British colonies and British communities all along the Connecticut River and as far south as Massachusetts. You know, the famous Deerfield Raid of 1704 was a raid in the middle of winter on a community in Massachusetts. So these early settlers were always under the threat of a Indian raid on their communities. And it was shortly after the war started that Governor Benning Wentworth of New Hampshire decided that he wanted to build a fort on the Connecticut River across from what is now Wells River, Vermont, so that he could use that as a staging spot for raids into Canada. And Benning Wentworth also thought that the Connecticut River Valley was going to be a pathway of the war to fight against the French. So he wanted it to be a supply depot for forces and a staging point to launch some raids into Canada. So he tapped Robert Rogers and some of his Rangers to construct this fort in 1756.
Right.
So they worked on it for about 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then their services were needed somewhere else on the other front of the war, which was over at Lake George and Lake Champlain. So they had to abandon their efforts to build this fort. But still, there was enough there that that Rogers always knew that he could go back to that space if he needed to.
Our guest this morning is Dan Taylor, a native of Barton, Vermont. He is with us to talk about the 250th anniversary of the raid of Rogers' Rangers. So the actual raid on St. Francis occurred on October 4th of what year?
Yeah, 1759. And 1759 was kind of the turning point in the war for Great Britain. Up until that point, the French were having their way with the British. They were soundly defeated in many battles. But in 1759, the tide started to turn. And in June of that year, the British took over and captured Fort Ticonderoga. And then a little bit later, and a little bit further north on Lake Champlain, they captured Crown Point. And also in June of 1759, and this is critical, General James Wolfe started his siege of Quebec City. And so it was just a matter of time before Quebec City fell.
Right. So what is the, there's different versions of the actual raid. There's, and much has gone into writing about the raid, but there's very, very different stories. What did Major Rogers say about the raid?
Well, he wrote a series of books known as the Journals of Robert Rogers after the raid, about 7 years after the raid. And of course, he didn't want to say anything in that published journal that would, make him look ill-suited for this raid. So I think he embellished a lot of it. But the truth of the matter is, and I have to refer your listeners on to a fantastic book. I was at Fort Number 4 a couple years ago, looking at that fort, and I picked up a copy of Bert Garfield Loescher's book called The History of Rogers Rangers. It's volume number 4, and it's dedicated solely to looking at the raid and the facts of the raid. And so if anyone is interested in more reading, I would certainly recommend Loescher's book.
Right.
But what really happened that year was the war in the British eyes was coming to an end. As soon as Quebec City fell, they would turn their attention onto Montreal. And then once Montreal fell, then the French forces would have to give up. So General Amherst, who was the supreme commander of all the British forces in the colonies, he was stationed at Crown Point along with Robert Rogers. And Amherst realized that he needed to open up a line of communication with General Wolfe up in Quebec City. So he dispatched a couple of soldiers. They were known as the Kennedy-Jacobs Party. And these two guys, their mission was to go into Canada and go specifically to the St. Francis village and offer them British friendship if the Indians remained neutral throughout the rest of the war. And so, but really what Amherst wanted to do was he gave these guys dispatches to give to General Wolfe, which outlined his fall plans for 1759, which included the capture of Montreal. So So these guys go up to the St. Francis Indian Village, and they make their offer. The Indians listen politely to them, and they were suspicious from the beginning. So rather than march them over to General Wolfe so that they could clue them in on this newfound friendship, they march them up to French authorities, and they are immediately arrested. And they knew that if they had been captured with these dispatches from Amherst, that they would be hung as spies. And so before they were discovered, they actually ate all those documents. But nevertheless, they were still incarcerated in a ship on the St. Lawrence River.
Right.
So then what happens next is really launches the raid into Canada. And what happened was General Montcalm from Quebec, a French general, sends a message to Amherst at Crown Point saying, yeah, hey, we got your guys, and by the way, they're in prison, and they're going to be hung as spies. Well, this really made Amherst angry, and Robert Rogers knew it, and so he makes a pitch again to Amherst to raid the Indian village, and this time General Amherst is open to the idea. So what happens next really sets the stage for the raid into Canada. So Robert Rogers approaches Amherst and says, you know, we can deal a blow to the Abnaki Indians and get some revenge on them taking the Kennedy-Jacobs party. And, you know, and if we can bring a force into Canada, then certainly that will draw French troops away from the siege at Quebec, and it's a win-win for us. So Amherst says, absolutely, let's go for it. And he tells Robert Rogers to have a force of 200 men ready in 2 days. And so he gathers his troops together, gets some supplies, and on the evening of September 13th, 1759, 200 men get into 10 whale boats and start paddling north on Lake Champlain, which is the early stages of their raid into St. Francis. So they can only, you have to remember that the French still control two-thirds of Lake Champlain, so they can only row at night so that they're not detected. And it takes them 10 days to go up Lake Champlain, and they finally reach Missisquoi Bay on September 23rd. And that's where they store their whale boats. They leave 5 days of supplies in their boats, and they intend to come back down Lake Champlain after their raid. But as soon as they start heading out on foot, because St. Francis is about another 90 miles, 100 miles away, as soon as they set out on their overland journey, their boats are discovered by the Abnaki Indians and are destroyed. Well, Rogers left two of his guards back there, two of his scouts, to guard those boats. And when they were discovered, they immediately went off and told Robert Rogers, hey, you can't go back this way anymore. They just found your boats. And so Rogers knows that he's reached a point of no return. He's going to have to come back down through the Connecticut River Valley. So does that all make sense to you?
Oh, yeah, it makes total sense.
Is that okay? So so what happens next? They spend 10 days trudging through the swamps in southern Quebec. You know, they never leave an area where they're not into ankle or calf-high water. And they spend 10 days walking towards the village of St. Francis. And finally, on the 10th day of their march, the men are weary. They're almost out of their provisions. And they're starting to grumbling about Robert Rogers and saying, you know, what is this guy doing? When all of a sudden, some geese fly overhead and Robert Rogers says, see, we must be near the St. Francis River. It's only a few more miles away. So they arrived to the St. Francis River on October 3rd, and they crossed the river later on that night and get ready for their raid the next day.
Right.
So what happens next is really kind of up to conjecture. Robert Rogers... he finds that the Indians are celebrating a wedding ceremony, and so they're up late at night. They're sleeping in, and when he does his reconnaissance of the village, one of the guys is tipped off. He tips off a Native American woman and says, there's strangers among us, and the village is going to be raided in the morning. So the villagers were tipped off that there is a force coming, and those who believed left the village that night and took refuge into the woods. And by 7:30, by 4:30 the next morning, the raid had begun, and Rogers came through with his force.
Our guest this morning is Dan Taylor, a native of Barton, Vermont. He is with us to talk about the 250th anniversary of the raid of Rogers Rangers. Now, the raid was one thing, but the trip home was another, because that was a long and dangerous journey.
It was. Now, when they reached the St. Francis village, they were out of provisions. So Rogers ordered to his men, they burned all the lodges that they found, and he ordered his men to fill up their pouches with food from the village for their return trip. Well, a lot of the men went on this raid because there was rumor of great wealth up in the St. Francis Indian community, because the Jesuits had, started to convert them, and they had built a church. And there was rumors of lots of gold and silver in the village. And so when the raid occurred, they did find a lot of loot. And rather than filling their pouches with food, a lot of the rangers filled their pouches with, religious objects from the chapel, or there were some gold candlesticks that were stolen, a silver statue of the Madonna, a ruby ring. There's all sorts of things that were taken from the St. Francis Indians. And that turned out to be the demise of a lot of Rogers Rangers men, because they should have carried the food rather than the loot.
Right. And some of them passed through Orleans County on their way home.
They did. And, it took them 8 days to go down the St. Francis River after they burned the village and burned the church. And, there's conjecture on how many Indians were killed. Rogers, in his journal, says that there was upwards of 200 people that they killed. Some of his own men in their diaries said that there was probably more like 80. But the French authorities said there was only about 30. So somewhere in that mix is the truth. But they knew the Indians were going to be in hot pursuit after raiding the village. So they hightailed it down the St. Francis River. And when they got to Sherbrooke, they were again out of food. And so Rogers' men pleaded with them to break up into different groups so that they would have a better chance of finding game and living off the land. I mean, at this point, they were living off from mushrooms and beech leaves and groundnuts just to survive. So Rogers reluctantly agreed, and so they broke up into these 11 different groups that came through the Northeast Kingdom. They all started from Sherbrooke, but they all took different routes back down to Fort Number 4. So when the whaleboats were discovered, Rogers sent back word to Amherst saying, hey, we can't come back through Lake Champlain anymore. We need to go through the Connecticut River. And so can you send some supplies up from Fort Number 4 to the old Fort Wentworth area, and that's where we'll rendezvous. And so Amherst sent this Lieutenant Samuel Stevens with a load of supplies to Fort Number 4 and then up the Connecticut River. So that's where they wanted to go. All of them were told to rendezvous back at the Wells River, where it meets the Connecticut, and that's where they would find their supplies. So they broke up on the evening of October 11th, and 2 days later, the Indians finally catch up with one of the groups, Lieutenant Avery's party was massacred at near Lovering Lake in Quebec. And some of those guys escaped and caught up with Rogers Rangers and said, hey, we were just attacked. And so Rogers knew that the Indians were on their heels. So, fascinating story so far.
Yes, it is. Hey, tell me.
Yes.
Is when I was growing up in Newport, there was always stories of loot being left behind around Lake Memphremagog and possibly in the Salem Lake section of Derby. And, of course, there's always people claiming they'd found it. Is that all myth? Or has there ever been anything found, or was it ever there?
Oh, yeah. Well, indeed, the Rangers did loot the village of St. Francis of all their precious gold and silver. And some of the items have been found over the years. Nothing recently, but there are some religious objects that were found up near Sherbrooke in the 1820s. And in the 1830s, there were some other religious objects found in northern Vermont. But much of the loot is still missing, like the ruby ring and the gold candlesticks. They've never been found. The statue, it's a 10-pound silver statue of the Madonna that has never been found. So gold coins have been known to be unearthed over the years. So some of the loot has been found, but much of it is still missing.
What impact did the raid actually have on the war? Did it have any?
Well, it did. Ironically, the day that Rogers set out on his raid, September 13, 1759, that is the same day that Quebec City fell into British hands. And so the war was kind of changing and coming to an end. Montreal was captured the following year, and then everything kind of shifted out to the west, and the west meaning like Michigan, where Pontiac was staging a siege. Chief Pontiac was staging a siege on Detroit. But what happened is when Rogers' Rangers came through the Northeast Kingdom, they were starving. They were afraid of Indian attacks. And in fact, there is a Lieutenant Dunbar, William Dunbar's party was attacked on the southern shores of Norton Pond. And eight of his men were killed and started floating down the Ferns River. And as the other parties came through in their starving state, you know, Farrington's party, there's a Campbell's party that came through, they found these bodies floating in the river, and because they were so starving, they actually ended up cannibalizing those bodies, and that led to some of them making it out alive.
Right. So how many people how many men started out compared to how many men ended up returning safely?
Yeah, well, they started out with 200 men from Crown Point, but before they even got to St. Francis, they were down to 142. And of those 142 men, in the end, there was only 74 that survived the ordeal. 43 men died of starvation on the retreat back through northern Vermont, and another 25 men were either killed or captured by the Indians.
Well, as we begin to wrap up here, what happened to Major Rogers after the war?
Well, he fell into hard times. He was debt-ridden because he actually used to pay the wages of his soldiers because the armies were slow in reimbursing and paying their men. So he accrued such a huge debt. After the war, he went to England, and he wrote a book called The Concise Account of North America, and he wrote a play about Chief Pontiac in Michigan. But he also met King George III and offered to King George, he offered his services to find the Northwest Passage to the Pacific Ocean. And so King George III appointed him the Royal Governor of Michigan. And when the Revolutionary War broke out, actually, the Continental Congress offered Robert Rogers a commission in the army, but he turned it down on the because he was a British. He considered himself a British officer, and so that raised a lot of suspicions. And he never fought for the American Revolution.
Right. So, are you all done studying the life of Robert Rogers, or does it continue?
It just continues. I mean, it's such a great story, and there's so many nuances, and in the end, it's a real tragedy. Not only did the men die of starvation, but Robert Rogers himself died, in 1759. And when he passed away, he was penniless and lived a life of obscurity. So it's just a tragic ending to a wonderful story.
Right, and I'm sure the Abenaki people weren't very impressed either, though.
No, unfortunately, and it was a wartime.
Right.
And it was an act of war that we raided the Indian village.
So during your yearly pilgrimages to the Northeast Kingdom to visit your family,
yeah,
have you yet discovered any of the loot?
No, but I have a friend back in Vermont who keeps saying we should go look for this loot. Yeah.
Well, I have a metal detector.
Excellent. Well, I think we should start at Norton Pond and work our way down to the Connecticut River.
Should we give up our day jobs to do this, though?
No. Actually, in Loescher's book, he gives you some great clues as to where he thinks you will find the treasure. And anyone interested in that, he should pick up a copy of his book.
Oh. Well, do you have any final words to say to the listeners?
Well, I think the story of Rogers Rangers is just a fabulous footnote to the Northeast Kingdom, and they should really read about it and come to understand it.
Do you remember all this right off the cuff, or do you got notes there and everything?
Well, I've got my map in front of me and that kind of stuff. I'm a little disappointed that we didn't talk more about the retreat through the kingdom.
Oh, well, next time.
Next time is right.
So you're going to have to fly over, and we'll bring out Johnny, and we'll all go out with our metal detectors and look for our fortune. All right, thanks.
All right, Scott, thanks. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me, Scott. It was certainly my pleasure.
Our guest this morning was Barton native Dan Taylor. This is Scott Wheeler of Derby, the host of the Vermont Voice, a program of 1490 AM WIKE in Derby, wishing you a great day in Vermont's last frontier, Vermont's Northeast Kingdom.